back, please join us. This session is on, as you see, e-portfolios in online learning, and both student and faculty perspective to be represented. Our presenters include Alejandra Salgamian-Nam, and she has a BA in art history from the University of California, San Diego, and just recently earned her master's in library and information science from San Jose State University in August of 2011. She's interested in information intermediation and instruction, as well as academic librarianship. We also have Elizabeth Wren Estes. She's a full-time lecturer for the School of Library and Information Science at San Jose State University. She has a BA in secondary education and psychology from the University of Colorado, and a master's in library and information science from the University of Denver. She's been a school and public librarian, as well as a secondary English teacher. And finally, we have Michelle Holshue-Simmons. She's a full-time lecturer for the School of Library and Information Science at San Jose State University, and has a PhD from the University of Iowa in Language, Literacy, and Culture, an MA in Library and Information Science from the University of Iowa, and an MAT, which is Master of Arts in Teaching, in English from Minnesota State University of Mankato, and a BA in English from the College of St. Benedict in St. Joseph, Minnesota. She's been a high school English teacher in Omaha, Nebraska, an academic librarian at Cornell College in Mount Vernon, Iowa, and was awarded the WISE Award for Excellence in Online Teaching in 2010. Ladies?
Thank you. Thanks very much, Elizabeth. We want to thank you for joining us so late in the afternoon. It's a pleasure for us to be here. This is our first visit to EDUCAUSE, and we were very, very excited that we had our proposal accepted to be here. We'd also like to say hello to everybody that's joining us virtually. It's nice to sit in front of an audience of real people since our program is 100% online. Most of the time, our students are in a virtual presence to us, not in a physical proximity to us. So thank you very much for coming. The School of Library and Information Science at San Jose State has been using a reflective e-portfolio as a culminating project option for the Master's in Library and Information Science since 2006. Our school is 100% online, as I just said, so in its delivery of instruction, our geographical reach now spans far beyond our traditional California locale to Canada, Europe, Asia, and we are looking right now with even going beyond that into some other global markets. Our distributed online mode of operation has implications not only for instructional needs and considerations, but for the administration and technical requirements for managing the e-portfolio as well. With full-time faculty living all across California, as well as far-flung locations such as Utah, Oregon, North Carolina, Florida, Kentucky, advising of the e-portfolio is done entirely online, primarily through asynchronous tools such as email, but also through synchronous tools such as Illuminate, which is our web conferencing software. So the SLIS e-portfolio is not really any different than most portfolios you'd think about. It's a place to showcase evidence that students have selected and organized to demonstrate and display their knowledge, skills, abilities, accomplishments, and achievements over a period of time that they've spent with us in our program. Students can present their work in an online publication, either through a SLIS-supported platform, which presently is D2L, or through a website of their own choice, and we'll talk more about that. As with any program, when we started the ePortfolio program, we looked at what goals we wanted to have it. And first and foremost, our goal is to enhance the learning process for our students and to demonstrate the students' understanding of the competencies that we have selected for them to master. In addition, the ePortfolio measures individual and group process towards learning objectives and allows the student to reflect on their MLIS experience in the broadest sense possible. The grading system for our ePortfolio is pass-fail. Since implementing this project, we have developed and refined the procedures, the technologies, and the methods for managing the project for the hundreds of students who graduate from our program each year. In the 5 years during which we have had the ePortfolio as our culminating project, we have had 2,265 students complete the project. Each one is under the tutelage of a full-time faculty advisor Michelle and I are both faculty advisors. We have roughly about 37 students assigned to each of us that we work with during the semester to get them through their e-portfolio. We are the basically the evaluator of their work process. If a student doesn't pass the first time, they do have one more attempt the following semester. But I think you can tell from the chart that I had put together at the admin level at school that we have a very high percentage of students passing. And we attribute this to the fact that we do have a one-on-one walkthrough between an advisor and a student while they're working on their e-portfolio. And we also have very, very, very good training for those students before they reach that level. In spring semester 2011, our largest number of students passed through the process, and an all-time high of 93% completed the experience. There are a few incidences, a few success stories that are not so successful, but overall, we feel that our ePortfolio program is a huge success. Student comments about the ePortfolio process are the most interesting, though, because they speak firsthand about how valuable the experience is. One of the students that I asked to comment on it for this presentation said, "I feel like I just went through a 3-month job interview." And another that I have right now said, "I was able to make connections between classes from the beginning of my program to the end in ways that I had never thought of before." Students often report that when they revisit their work from classes early in their program, they realize that they now understand the course concepts in a new and more sophisticated way than they had during the course itself. While the ePortfolio is not intended to be an employment dossier due to its substantial length and its academic tone, we do encourage students to use parts of it, portions of it, when they do go to apply for jobs. And quite a few of our graduates have told us how showing a video that they used as an artifact in one of their competencies as a very effective tool to show an employer that they have that skill that matches up with the job. We continue to provide the thesis option as well as the ePortfolio option, but the vast majority of students, 98%, consistently choose the ePortfolio. While the thesis provides students the opportunity to delve deeply into one research question, the ePortfolio provides students an opportunity to reflect on the breadth of their coursework. Even areas that they do not intend to pursue professionally, but nonetheless are part of their professional foundation. So in addition to our experience working with hundreds of students every semester for the past 5 years, we also have implemented the ePortfolio project in 3 separate systems: Plone, Angel, and D2L. With each of these transitions, we have coordinated the training for faculty and students and the administration of the new technology. Since many institutions make use of learning management systems, our experience with 3 different systems, as well as our experience with the migrations from one system to the next, may be beneficial to other institutions considering similar projects. Michelle will speak to those topics during her part of her presentation. So what do we hope you carry away with you today? Well, we hope by sharing our process of developing and managing the ePortfolio project and our process of aligning our curriculum around competencies, we hope to provide insight for other educators who are looking to develop a meaningful culminating project for their degree program.
So as Beth explained, we developed the ePortfolio as the culminating project for our master's program in 2006 as a replacement for a culminating project that was found to be unsatisfactory for a variety of reasons by both the faculty and the students. In striving to develop something that served our program's purpose as a capstone academic project and as something that was both appropriately challenging and beneficial to our students, our former director, Ken Haycock, turned to documents published by our professional associations, the American Library Association and the Special Library Association, regarding the skills and knowledge that incoming library and information professionals should possess. The SLIS faculty, SLIS is School of Library and Information Science, the SLIS faculty then distilled these documents into 15 competencies, and these then began, and then began the process of building our curriculum around these competencies. So for each of the 14 competencies, the students copy and paste the competency statement itself at the top of a document. Then the student explicates the competency statement systematically and thoroughly. This explication is usually about 3 pages. Then there is the artifacts section in which the student explains how each of his or her artifacts proves that he or she is competent in this area. Typically, students present three artifacts for each competency statement. So there is a section usually, this section is usually around three pages as well. Finally, there's a short conclusion in which the student explains how he or she is going to apply this knowledge in settings outside of the academic environment. Then the student attaches the relevant artifacts, again, typically three. The final competency, which is number 15, is integrated into the professional philosophy as it is forward-looking about how students intend to contribute to the betterment of their communities. Thus, this one competency is not as formally structured as the previous 14. In addition, students have an introduction to the whole ePortfolio, they write a professional philosophy, and they have a conclusion. And then finally, they include a statement affirming their academic integrity. In the end, students have produced about 75 pages of polished original text, in addition to the roughly 45 artifacts of varying lengths that they have put forth as evidence of their competency.
So we have said that we're using D2L as our platform right now, but we still give students the option to use non-D2L. One of the things that draws a student to the ePortfolio is putting all of their work in one place and having it all in one place that they can use after graduation as well as getting through their culminating semester. In order to do that, though, D2L only archives for 6 months, and so then the student has to move everything. So we still give them the option to build in other platforms as long as the advisor gives them permission. It's up to each advisor to set criteria, but when we looked at coming here to talk to you about it, we looked at a kind of a continuity of feelings from different instructors. We came up with three things that all of us look for before we say okay to using something else. How easy is that alternate platform to navigate? Are we, as the advisor who's going to have to evaluate everything, how hard is it going to be for us to actually go through this? If you have 37 students doing 15 competencies times revisions, last semester I had over 1,200 documents that my hands touched. So I don't want to be having to learn something new. So I look at how easy is it going to be for me, sadly. Can the platform handle loading attachments and easily opening and viewing them? A lot of them don't. A lot of them do. How secure is that platform? It is ultimately a requirement that you must password protect, you must keep people's identity secret, and you must protect privacy. So if you can't do that with what you want to use, the answer is usually no. So I asked two of my students if I could use just a couple examples here. So this slide is of a current student I have who decided to use WordPress. And it looks pretty, doesn't it? D2L doesn't look so pretty. She's looking at that she wants to take this and parts of it and turn it into things that she can use later on to do job interviews. So that's why she chose it. She also did not want to have to move everything after 6 months. So WordPress has been very successful for our students, and it does all of the requirements that I just stated. The next slide is becoming more and more, maybe there is no next slide. Well, I'll just say the Google Sites is becoming more and more popular for our students. I have about 10 of my 37 students using Google Sites right now to do their ePortfolio. So I was very interested in speaking with Google today about what other types of things that they're looking at bringing in to make that even a better product to use for ePortfolio. So those are just some examples of other things that we do allow other than the D2L.
All right, so in the last 5 years, we have had to adapt, as Beth mentioned, to three different technologies for the ePortfolio platform. And we have had to be nimble as we have faced these changes. When we first began the ePortfolio, we used Plone, which is a data management tool, but it was not integrated into our learning management system, which at the time was Blackboard. When we moved to Angel for our LMS, we used the Angel module for the ePortfolio, which was fully integrated, so students could save documents in their Angel repository throughout the program. Then this past spring, the whole university moved to Desire to Learn, which is D2L, so we migrated again. We feel strongly that our students benefit from learning new technologies, so even though these transitions have created a large amount of work in creating training materials for faculty and students, we overall feel that our ability to transfer the ePortfolio process to any technology is a strength of our program. We faculty members primarily deal with content, and the interface and technology really don't matter as long as the interface allows students to deliver their content. So I'm going to give you a few screenshots of the different interfaces and show you some of the differences. So first of all, this is a screenshot of what the ePortfolio in Angel looked like. So in Angel, students worked within an HTML table, and you can see that the table right there, and I have just those blue boxes are my little additional words on top. So there were three cells across and then 14 cells down. The 14 cells down were one for each of the competencies. Our IT department set up the table as a template into which the students inserted their documents. Each one of the competencies appeared down the first column on the left, then each one was in a separate cell. Then in the second column, students attached either a Word or PDF documents with their competency essays. It's in the middle there. And then in the third column, students attached their artifacts, either as Word documents, as PDFs, as image files, or other media forms. If students wanted to include a web address, this third column there did not allow for web addresses. So what they needed to do, the students needed to do, was integrate their URL into their competency statement, in the one in the second column, their essay, basically. For multimedia files, students could upload to our school's multimedia server, which we call Amazon, or they could use an external server such as Dropbox. Then in addition to the matrix with these competencies, students added text above the table for their introduction and below their table for their conclusion and affirmation. Additionally, they attached their professional philosophy as a Word document before the matrix and after the introduction. So there were some advantages to Angel. The Angel interface was relatively straightforward, and it was easy to gauge a student's progress just by glancing at the matrix. Students felt a sense of accomplishment as the matrix became populated with their competency essays and their artifacts. Having the competency essays attached as Word documents had the advantage of students and advisors being able to take advantage of Word features such as spell check, so typos were easy to catch. Of course, there were some disadvantages to Angel. While Angel did function for our ePortfolio process, it had more than a few limitations and annoyances. The appearance of the publication could not be customized, so pretty much everyone's ePortfolios looked largely the same, and only the content differed from one person's to the next. Additionally, the process of creating the publication using the matrix was rather convoluted without much of the process that students could learn and then transfer to other situations. So as you can see from the screenshot from the previous page, it did not really have the appearance of a website. It looked more, it was more like a locker for attachments. And then we discovered that Angel was finicky and quirky in many, many ways. For example, when students uploaded their three or four artifacts for each competency, and that would be the things on the right side there. They appeared in random order and they could not be intentionally ordered. Thus, file naming conventions were especially important with the Angel interface so that it was clear which artifact went with which section of the competency essay. And finally, students were not able to export their ePortfolio from Angel, so they lost access 6 months after they graduated because of server space issues. So the next interface that I want to show you is D2L. So as you can see here, along the top is just sort of a header with the student's name. Along the left side are all of the competency links. Those links go to separate pages, so the whole thing is a website with, you know, let's say 15 pages, or 17 pages, I guess it is. And then what we're looking at here is competency A. So you can see in the middle of the page, this student has the introduction, or sometimes I refer to that as the explication of the competency. Down further, then there's the section about the artifacts themselves, and then at the very bottom, she has attached the artifacts, and she has them there as Word documents. So the D2L interface resembles a typical website much more than the Angel interface did. Students are able to customize the appearance of their site by selecting among a large number of design templates. while the functionality and basic layout is consistent among all the students. The process of creating the publication is much more straightforward than with Angel, and the process is more similar to applying a style sheet to a website, which of course is a transferable skill. In addition, an additional advantage is that D2L integrates Turnitin, which of course is a plagiarism detection tool. We are still working on how we might make use of this tool, but it is helpful to have it available to us. And finally, the ePortfolio module is integrated into the learning management system, so students can deposit artifacts into their D2L folder for their ePortfolio throughout the course of their master's program. Of course, there are disadvantages as well. The main disadvantage of D2L is the inability for students to export or save the entire ePortfolio in a platform outside of D2L. Because of server space issues, students lose access to their D2L ePortfolio 6 months after graduation. And of course, students can save each file individually, but they would not be able to save the whole package publication as a package. Additionally, while D2L does provide quite a range of design possibilities, students are confined to a limited number of design choices. For students who are artistic or who have a lot of web design experience, this limitation might feel constraining to them. And then finally, because the text of a D2L ePortfolio is part of a web page, we lose the helpful proofreading features of Word, such as spell check. Okay, then I want to show you an example of an ePortfolio as a website. Again, this actually looks pretty similar to the D2L one, and that's simply because the D2L one resembles a website. So you can see at the top of this page, the student has the competency statement itself. Along the left side are the links to the all of the other pages, which are the other competencies. In the middle of the page is first her introduction or explication. Down further is her section about the artifacts. Then there's the conclusion. And then at the very bottom, this student has her evidence or artifacts. Some students sort of scatter the artifact through the essay so that it's close to the section about the competency or about that artifact, but this student chose to do it at the end, and I think most students do. So some advantages of a website. Students who want more control over the design and continued access to their ePortfolio probably are best served by selecting an interface that is not supported by SLIS, so a website. Students often use a web design tool such as Google Sites, but students also use blog formats such as WordPress. For some students, being able to create their own site is a skill they want to cultivate, and so they forego the potential for tech support and work independently. So some disadvantages of using a website. The main disadvantage for creating the ePortfolio as a website is that we in SLIS cannot provide tech support. Thus, students need to be quite independent if they choose this route. They need to have not just the know-how, but also the time to devote to designing a website when they will be graded on content, not on the design. Additionally, students must secure a server on which to house their site, and of course, this can cost some money. While the ePortfolio process has been overwhelmingly positive for our school, we have encountered a range of challenges that we continue to try to resolve. And the first one is privacy, probably no surprise here. So our students complete a wide range of assignments in our program, including analyses of existing programs and services. Additionally, most of our classes include some type of collaborative work, and so some of the artifacts that students submit are assignments that they completed with a partner or a group. We need to be sure that no matter which interface the students use, they protect the privacy of individuals or institutions they included in their artifacts, and the privacy of any SLIS students or instructors with whom they might have worked. We don't want someone to be able to search for his or her name in a search engine and have confidential documents from an ePortfolio appear. Thus, we require that all students include an affirmation statement at the end of their ePortfolio indicating that they have password protected their site and made a good faith effort to protect the privacy of other individuals and institutions. So I'm just going to show you that. Let me make that a little bit smaller, I'm sorry. So this is just the required components. I'm going to scroll right to the bottom. And you can see there the affirmation number 2 says, I've respected the privacy of others by removing mention in this e-portfolio of information that could lead to the disclosure of the identity of students or employers, and I have made good effort to obtain permission from all group members for group projects submitted as evidence. So the student can consult with his or her e-portfolio advisor and the e-portfolio coordinator to ensure that measures taken are appropriate. We take privacy issues very seriously, and even though we work on this issue a lot, it remains a challenge that we are always dealing with. The next challenge that we have is academic integrity. So we work with many students every semester, and it is difficult to be absolutely sure that all students' work is their own original creation. We manage this challenge in a few ways, albeit imperfect. First, the affirmation statement, and I'm just going to go right back to that again. Number 1 there is, all introductory, reflective, and evidentiary work submitted is mine alone, except where indicated as a group or team project, and has been prepared solely by me. So I'm reading number 1 there. So that's their one of our ways of dealing with that. Secondly, we as advisors get to know students' writing quite well because we just read a lot of it, both the competency essays as well as the artifacts. If one person's writing style changed dramatically from one document to the next, I suspect that most of the advisors would notice and question the student. And then finally, as I mentioned earlier, in D2L, which is our learning management system, there is the option of using the anti-plagiarism software, Turnitin. We are exploring the possibility of making use of this tool for our e-portfolio submissions. Oops, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. Then the next challenge that we have is digital storage. So storing students' digital assets is something that we deal with as a challenge. With 14 competency essays and 3 or 4 artifacts for each of these competencies, these e-portfolios can consume a lot of server space. Additionally, many students' e-portfolios include huge multimedia files that consume even more server space. We do not have the server space to store students' e-portfolios in perpetuity, and so we are very explicit right from the start of the program that we will keep their e-portfolios on our servers for 6 months after they graduate, but then we will delete them. Because of the difficulty in exporting the e-portfolio from D2L or formerly from Angel, this could cause difficulty for some students. Alternatively, students can manage their e-portfolio entirely independently from SLIS by creating their own website on a non-SLIS supported interface, but then they lose the potential for tech support. We know that neither option is perfect, but for the most part, students manage this challenge really well. Because we are teaching people who will become information professionals, we feel that it is actually a good opportunity for students to think about the challenges of digital archiving in a very real way as they think about storage for their own e-portfolio. And then the last challenge that I want to talk to you about is consistency in assessment. We have about 20 different full-time faculty members who are e-portfolio advisors. Managing the balance between consistency throughout the program and academic freedom is challenging. The e-portfolio coordinator works with each of the advisors to ensure that there are not widely differing expectations and procedures for students who are assigned to one advisor instead of another, but inevitably, there are differences in approach. We do have guidelines that all advisors are expected to follow, such as that the advisor must provide feedback to a student within 5 days of submission of a competency essay. Some of the e-portfolio advisors manage the workload in very different ways, with some allowing students to submit competency essays at any time throughout the term, and that's the way that both Beth and I manage our workload, and others allowing submissions only on a few set deadlines throughout the term. Because students are randomly assigned to advisors, these differences in approach can be understandably frustrating to students. We are currently working on developing rubrics for the e-portfolio that would provide a measure of consistency across advisors. So now that we are 5 years into this e-portfolio process, we can proudly say that it has been a great success, both for our program as well as for students. The e-portfolio provides us data every semester that we can aggregate for our program assessment, both for our regional accreditation and for our ALA accreditation. In addition to program assessment, we feel that building our curriculum around the 15 competencies is helping us to have a more consistent and comprehensive curriculum. Consistency is especially a challenge for us since our faculty is distributed, and so having competencies helps all of the faculty to be mindful about how each class offering fits within the whole curriculum. Additionally, the vast majority of students find the process to be beneficial. They appreciate the opportunity to reflect on their work throughout the program. And I'd like to share with you just two quotations from students who completed the e-portfolio last spring, and then we're going to be hearing from Alejandra, who just went through the program also and finished last spring. So one student said, "Creating an e-portfolio reminded me that there is joy in the process. Sometimes getting to the end product isn't as valuable as the journey. An e-portfolio shows one to allows one to reflect on the journey. It gives students a rare opportunity to reflect on their education holistically. Classes become important collectively rather than just individually. Producing the e-portfolio has been a monumental task, but it has given me a chance to review my entire graduate education and a chance at reflection." Another student said, "I chose the e-portfolio option because I wanted to reflect upon and codify what I had learned. Reflection, much like the final shavasana of yoga, is how the mind connects learning to practice. It is my intention that I will return to my e-portfolio in my professional career to remind myself of the basic competencies of the profession, and in so doing, will continuously improve my ability to serve as a librarian." And so now we will hear from Alejandra.
So when I began my e-portfolio journey, we, the students, had the option to create our e-portfolio through ANGEL, which is the learning management system. We could create a personal website either through Google Sites or a website that we create on our own, or use Desire to Learn, better known as D2L, which is another learning management system. Having used ANGEL during the entire SLIS program and having created websites for various class assignments, I decided to go with D2L. I wanted to challenge myself by learning and using a new learning management system, all while trying to complete a 14 competency e-portfolio in a matter of 12 weeks. As many other MLIS students, we had the drive and motivation to learn as much as we could to better ourselves for our future career. Students who chose D2L as their interface had to complete a quick assignment to prove that we are willing and able to work with this new system. And fortunately enough, the SLIS program really prepared me to take on a new system with ease, and I was able to adapt to D2L fairly quickly. Now this is my D2L dashboard page. On the left-hand side of the page is a menu of the various areas involved in creating the e-portfolio. As many of the students, we really only used three of the options, which were dashboard, the artifacts link, and the presentations link. As you can see, that's my dashboard page. You can see any of the recent activity that I've done to edit my e-portfolio. Also, you're able to see who viewed your page and when they last viewed it. In the artifacts link, that is where you're able to upload all your assignments that you plan on using for your e-portfolio. And when you upload an assignment, you have the option of writing a brief description to explain what competency you plan on using it for, or anything else that might help you keep your e-portfolio a bit more organized. And lastly is the presentations link, and that is where you're able to manage and edit your e-portfolio. When using D2L, you have the ability to give access to anyone by giving them a specific URL. And this is what D2L looks like when you give someone access. And this is my introduction page. It's a professional web page, or it's similar to a web page, and the viewer is able to navigate through the various competencies just by clicking on any of the competencies. Now the competencies are listed A through N, and there's also an introduction, a philosophy, and a conclusion. Now competencies range anywhere from 5 to 7 pages, as Michelle explained earlier, and each student discusses their competence, their take on the competency and how they became knowledgeable in that area. They're able to discuss their competency through their coursework, their work experience, and or personal familiarity from using the library themselves. Now, within each competency, students are required to provide assignments or projects, which are known as artifacts, as I said a few minutes ago, that correlates to each competency. Now, here's an example of competency F from my e-portfolio. Now, I kind of just cut it through so that you're able to see what the artifacts look like at the bottom of the page. My competency F is much longer than that. As I mentioned before, when you go to the artifacts link, you're able to add it onto your competency. So when I'm at competency F, I just hit add artifact, and then I go through that library of artifacts that I created, and I'm able to add it on there. And when you're a viewer to the ePortfolio link, you're able to download and actually view each assignment that you post. Mentioned earlier, each competency requires about 3 artifacts per competency. It could be anywhere from a well-thought-out discussion post that occurred during a semester, or a website that a student created on Google Sites based on a reference library's website. And students are also allowed to use assignments from courses outside of the SLIS program or projects from current or previous jobs as long as it pertains to the competency. Now here's an example of an artifact I use for competency I. For a reference and instructional services course, I had to create an informative pathfinder on a subject of my choice. I went with creating a Google Sites page to create a pathfinder on infant and toddler nutrition information for new mothers. This example was a perfect fit for competency I, as it was regarding concepts, principles, and techniques involved in creating and using reference services for individuals or groups of users. Although I completed my ePortfolio successfully, I did come across a few challenges along the way that I know many other students dealt with. The main challenge was having to complete the entire ePortfolio in 12 weeks. That includes sorting and organizing assignments from 15 courses, picking and choosing which assignment corresponds to that specific competency, brainstorming and researching each competency to be able to write your explication, and writing continuously for almost 3 months, which could be a bit tiresome. Now, another difficult challenge was locating assignments based on personal organization skills. Many students, as myself, we didn't realize, or at least I didn't realize at the beginning of the program, that many of these assignments would be crucial when constructing the portfolio. You know, many students may have lost work because of poor organization skills or from a computer glitch. Personally, I was able to organize my assignments fairly well. I did switch computers halfway through the program, so I did have to go to my old computer, hope that it worked, and I was able to transfer a lot of my assignments onto my new computer. Now, in terms of ePortfolio successes, completing the ePortfolio itself is a wonderful success. When working on the ePortfolio, it reminded me of all the reasons why I knew I wanted to be a library professional. It helped me regain some of the passion that I may have lost while going to school, working full-time, and becoming a mom. Another success is that it helps students remember everything they learned and prove how much they've grown throughout the program. Regardless of your focus in library school, it really shows how well-rounded you've become as a library professional. And the amount of information I learned throughout through my courses, professors, and classmates is really astounding. Lastly, another success to having completed the ePortfolio is that students are able to showcase their portfolio digitally. This ePortfolio is really an innovative way to show students' hard work and dedication to their education and future careers. I personally benefited both personally and professionally by completing the ePortfolio.
All right, so that concludes the formal part of our presentation. So we would be happy to take questions about any of the things that we've covered, or if you have something that we did not cover, we'd be happy to answer. If you could use the microphone so that the people who are joining us virtually could also hear, that would be great. Yes, please go ahead.
I'm Alfred Hartog from SURF organization in the Netherlands. What I noticed that you have been presenting a lot about the construction of the portfolio by students, but almost nothing about giving feedback and scoring the portfolio. And doing that in that system would, of course, greatly help the complete procedure, because it's not only about construction, it's the whole process, of course, until scoring. Has including this mechanism of giving feedback and scoring never been a requirement for an e-portfolio?
I'd be happy to respond to that. Giving feedback is a huge part of the e-portfolio process. Just in the interest of time, we had to cut what we focused on, so we did focus on this. So what happens is students submit their competencies to us, and then we as advisors then read over and give specific feedback. So what
but
I do...
You do that, for instance, by email or...
Which
is not connected to the e-portfolio system.
Previously, I did it by email. Just this semester, I set it up all within D2L, so I have it all within private discussion forums within D2L, but I'm the only person in the program who's doing that. Everybody else does email, and that's what I did previously. It was just something new I was trying, and so I'm using D2L for that as a way to keep track of everything so that I have my e-portfolio stuff all in D2L, and my email is separate from that. So then I send back to students, you know, a bulleted list of things that I want them to revise. I send it back to my last line is revise and resubmit. And then they send it back to me. I read it over again, and either I send them back a message that says, you know, hi Susan, comp A, pass, or it says comp A, and then I have another bulleted list, and I send it back to them. They revise, send it back to me. We can keep doing that until it gets to be a pass. Now, most students, at the beginning of the semester, I would say, for me, I think everybody's a little different, but for me, most students at the beginning of the semester pass on their second draft. Toward the end of the semester, they start to pass on their first draft because they've figured out my expectations. That is not to say that I don't have some students who revise 4, 5, 6, 7 times for every single comp. Most, I would say, if I looked at all of my students, I have 37 students this semester who I'm doing this with, I would say most students, the average would be 1 revision or 2 revisions per comp.
Okay, thank you.
And I do it just a little bit differently. The English teacher in me, I guess, even though we're both
too.
English teachers, she's just a little more organized. I basically take the whole document and make comment on it the first time around and send it back so that the student can get kind of a feel for how I'm going to grade. It's more like what are each one of our looking for? We're looking at competencies that we've had faculty meetings to discuss what the competency means and what we're looking for, but we still have that academic integrity of each instructor that's an advisor looking at those documents, and that's the judgment of pass-fail. So we all do it a little bit differently, and we've been working on consistency and talking about it. But right now, if Michelle and I looked at student papers, I think we would have much the same responses. But how we get the feedback back to students, I do a lot of FaceTime with students and Skype, and I, you know, any way to help them understand what's needed in their competency. I let that be on their request, but we do use, because we don't ever see these students sitting across a table, okay? So we use all virtual Google Docs, send a web page, send a Word document, you know, so I usually try and give them as thorough an evaluation the first time out so that they can look at it, revise it, and then, just as Michelle has stated, I have very few students that go to a second or third revision after the first one.
But I think you would agree that if you do all this within the same system as a kind of workflow on the portfolio, that would be a benefit, I think.
This was my intention. And okay. For me, it is working well. you know, there are a few little glitches that I need to work out, but for the most part it is working well, and I agree. Having last semester and the previous semesters, I had students submitting to my email, and it just in terms of workflow and keeping my life organized, because of course I teach classes as well, so keeping my ePortfolio students' questions and submissions separate from my regular students', you know, questions and so forth and communication, to me, I wanted to separate them just for reasons of just being organized.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions, either from the virtual people or from the people in this room? Please go ahead. Well, to be honest, our switch to D2L was mandated by our university. So it wasn't necessarily that we went trolling for a new LMS. I think it's a big improvement over Angel, so I'm happy with the change. As far as would we want more flexibility, I think, maybe Alejandra can answer this, I think students are pretty happy with the level of flexibility that we have, that if they want to do something that's very different, they can use a Google site. And there are enough differences in the ways that people can produce their template in D2L that I think people are pretty happy with it. I don't hear complaints about that. They don't. I have one student this semester who has just lots of steps. I have to go through many pages to get to her competency. And I deliberated about that. Should I tell her, just cut it out, just let me get there? I have to go through probably 4 steps. She has a password, and for some reason she has it set up in such a way that my browser doesn't save her password, so I have to copy and paste the URL, then I have to copy and paste the password, and then I get to a welcome page, then I get from the welcome page to the next page, then I have to click on that and I get to the next page. It annoys me, and I thought, is it worth it to tell her, tone it down? And I thought, you know what, for the number of minutes that it takes me to do it compared to the number of minutes it's going to take her to redo the way she has it structured, it was probably not worth it. So I didn't mention it. If people go way overboard, I probably would, but I don't know.
Like we had said, you have 12 weeks to write 75 pages. The last thing I'm worried about is the way it looks.
I think so.
No, I mean, obviously you want it to look professional, but I'm more, like they said, they're more worried about the content mm-hmm. rather than the look. So as long as it, you know, I'm not the most creative person, so I just wanted it to look decent, mm-hmm. and that was that. So I think that the time frame is kind of limits you in creating a...
I've had to tell students, it might look really pretty and it looks very professional, but I'm not grading on that. I have a lot of students that are turning in a lot of video and a lot of audio, though, and we do talk about the quality of that, because we're not supposed to be regrading an assignment. I hope we read it, but we're not challenging that grade that was given to that student. We're just looking to see if it matches the competency. But if the video is so grainy, I can't even tell it's that particular student, or the sound is muffled, then I'll make some comments that, hey, you thought this was really cool, but you may not be using something that's going to work for you. But I think it is an issue with a lot of more of our creative students about they want it to look the way it is. And all I tell them is, fine, that's great if you want to put the work into that, but remember, you have 12 weeks. And I'm not going to care about all of your backgrounds and how wonderful they look, because you don't have 6 of your competencies done. So I think that technology, I think it's fun to play with it. And I have a couple students that are very creative, as well as keeping up with it. But I think most of them I think Alejandra showed you a pretty good representation of what our students do.
And just to clarify, we've mentioned 12 weeks on several occasions. Our semesters are 16 weeks, but we have the deadline 12 weeks into the semester, so this semester it's November 21st. The reason is that this is the culminating project for the master's program, and so for the graduate college to be able to do the paperwork and so forth, it has to be at that point. So it is somewhat of an artificial deadline. It's not the end of the semester, but D2L locks down. We have it set up so that D2L locks down on November 21st at midnight, and students cannot make revisions at that point. So that's how we deal with that. Yes, please go ahead. That's a great question.
It's a decision made. Yeah.
That's a great question. I'm sorry that I don't have the answer to that, but if you want an answer to that, we could have you connect with the people who actually would have made that decision and would have, one of our tech people, Dale David, has done lots of research on, you know, how this ePortfolio module worked within D2L, and he, I'm sure, would have addressed some of those things in his research, but I'm sorry, I don't think we know.
No, I don't.
Please go ahead.
Okay, we have lots of hands.
Okay.
Well, I recommend students do,
yeah.
But it's my recommendation. It's not a department recommendation. I think it's by each individual advisor, if I'm understanding your question. When students come to me and they say, I don't want to use D2L, I want to use X because I want to be able to use this for employment, the university's opinion is, well, it's not an employment dossier, it's your ePortfolio. My practitioner side says, that's really a good idea, and you should just keep stuffing stuff into this thing so that you've got, you know, it's part of your resume. I think that all of the advisors would say that just walking in with your ePortfolio like Alejandra's right now, you'd probably put an employer to sleep. Mm-hmm. But using parts of some of the websites that have been developed by some of the students that I've worked with could be used quite effectively in an employment dossier. So I don't think SLIS is pushing that right now, but they are making it very well known that 6 months after it disappears, and as I said, and it kind of gets back to the other person's question here, is a lot of people are choosing non-D2L because they want to have the ability to keep it beyond that archiving.
I will say when we were using Angel, more people chose non-Angel interfaces, non-SLIS supported interfaces, because as you saw, Angel was not very attractive and it was rather clunky. And so I would say at that point, it was probably 50-50. 50% of the people chose a website externally and 50% of the people chose Angel. When we went to D2L, it's simply more attractive, it's easier to work with. So at this point, among my students, now it just might be a fluke, but I would say 75% use D2L, 25% use a non-SLIS site, like WordPress or something like that.
And mine's more at 50-50.
Is it 50-50? Okay.
I have more students using non-D2L.
I think it depends a lot on discipline of students. When you're pulling from the library science, I see it in the education area that a lot of people
We had lots of other hands up. Please go ahead.
They do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we encourage students to do that. That, you know, at the very beginning of the program, students take a class, the number is 203, and it's just a technology sort of introduction. And in that, there's a module about uploading or transferring, really, because we're still within the same system. We're in D2L for our learning management system, but then this module is over here, so it's kind of within the same. And then just using that repository as a place to store their materials. And we really encourage that because people switch computers, people's hard drives crash, all those sorts of things. We have had that situation where, you know, people's digital lives are wiped out and then they're scrambling. And so we really do encourage them to do that right from the very beginning.
I have a question on behalf of one of the online attendees. And that question is, have you given thought to students starting the e-portfolio earlier in the program so it's building over time? What do you see as the advantages and disadvantages of doing it as a capstone as you do currently?
I would say we encourage students to put those, archive all of their files as they go through the program. Then I think individual instructors encourage, like in my regular classes, not my e-portfolio class, but in my regular classes, I suggest to students in my assignment sheets which e-portfolio competencies this particular assignment might contribute toward. And then in my comments, when I'm grading the paper, I will say, I hope you hold on to this for Comp K, or something like that. And so I do encourage students along the way to hold on to things. I also encourage students to set up their organizational system. And I give them a suggestion for how to do it. I say, set up 14 folders on your computer, name each of them Comp A, Ethics, Comp B, Environments, and so forth. And then just start putting files in. Even if they end up not being what you end up using for that comp, at least you will have something there. And so in my role as an instructor, not as an e-portfolio advisor, I do just as one of my office hours, one time during the semester, I tell my students I'm having an office hour specifically about the e-portfolio. I'd be happy to answer questions. I probably am not going to be your e-portfolio advisor, but I can help you with, you know, some organizational things. And, you know, people have lots of questions because they've heard about this big scary thing. And they and so people come, ask me lots of questions, and I always say, you know, keep in mind you're going to have to go with what your e-portfolio advisor says, you know, when you are in the class. But you can do some preliminary work. So I think that would be one perspective.
Yeah, and a lot of students, they don't get to needing the artifacts until much later in their coursework, because of all the prerequisites. So starting the e-portfolio earlier officially, I think that was more what the question was, officially.
Yeah,
we do it unofficially, saying don't wait until the last semester before you're going to graduate, but start doing it now. But to say, you know, we can open up and let you register for it and you can start working on it officially, that's just not within the administrative parameters for the for e-portfolio right now. There's a lot of prerequisites before you can get there.
I think we are
this. I'm going to take this one last question because she's had her hand up for I don't know how long.
Okay, I'm from the American University in Cairo, and we have a pilot with architectural engineering department where we're using Epsilon basically. And I got a sense that what you're doing is instead of a thesis.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Is. That's correct.
So. Students that use a website or a Google site, couldn't they, in the future, if they want to use it for employment, just link it to another portfolio? And if they're using Desire to Learn and they lose it, wouldn't that be sort of like a waste? They don't have a sort of a they don't have their thesis anymore, you know, if they can't export it from Desire to Learn. So my question is, why wouldn't the sites be better or a website be better?
Well, I think the issue with, and I'm trying to be politically correct here, especially since I'm probably being filmed saying this. we even though Angel was clunky, we were like the only department on campus that was not using D2L. And so it was like, thou shalt do this and thou shalt do it soon. And so it was like, oh, what are we gonna do with ePortfolio? Oh, we'll just use D2L because they have a module, blah, blah, blah. The option of how long you can archive that stuff, and I've worked with a student to get all of their stuff off of Angel and to someplace else, and it's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. The university doesn't seem to want to push to an ePortfolio software, and I don't know why. I'm not on that level at all. So as an instructor, I just basically say to my students way early in the program, think about how long you want that archive to be there and how hard you want to work after you graduate to get all of this huge document, because there's a lot there you're not using that you've uploaded to the system and you didn't select it. So now where are you going to put it and how are you going to organize it? So think of it personally. Now, the tech support is a big issue to a lot of people. They want the tech support, and that means you have to do D2L. But I think at some point, right now it's 98% doing ePortfolio and 2% doing a thesis. So ePortfolio, we're 5 years into this and we're still discussing issues. I think that we're going to see another round of discussion about ePortfolio and what's best for our students as they move into a job market that's going to demand, you know, better presentation skills when you go to look for a job. So I think it's still out there to discuss. But I hear what you're saying. Because you definitely do lose a lot of work if you just say, oh, it's gone. You know, they're bye, you know. But any other questions? Because I think we're out of time, but thank you so much for joining us. And all of our ePortfolio, all of our stuff is transparent on the San Jose State School of Library and Information site, so you could go in there. We have a prolific amount of written documentation and video, et cetera, on our ePortfolio if you'd like to know more about it. But thank you very much for coming.
And there are examples of students' ePortfolios. The one D2L ePortfolio that I had a screenshot of is one of the examples that the student has given us permission to use. So if you go in, it's called 289 Handbook. 289 is the ePortfolio number and handbook. If you just do a search, you'd be able to find our whole handbook and then as well some examples in different interfaces. So thank you very much. Our contact information is in the EDUCAUSE site for this presentation. Please feel free to email us if you have additional questions. Thank you.
And also, Elizabeth, I think would like us to remind you to fill out the
Please fill out the survey. This session and the conference in general. It'll be available online starting now, and I believe through Saturday.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.